Fine Music Radio.
Book Choice with Paige Nick on FMR.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Tuesday, the 27th of May on Fine Music Radio, and it's lunchtime, which means you're tuned into Book Choice, the hour-long book show that we have every 2 weeks. And I'm your host, Paige Nick, and this show is very proudly sponsored by Exclusive Books. We have the most lekker show lined up for you today, and I tell you why it's lekker. It's lekker because it's local. The books that we're going to bring to you today are 100% South African. And we are 100% proud to be proudly South African. These are incredible titles. Each of them is of a world-class standard, and we are very excited to bring them to you. We've got Follow Me to Africa by Penny Hall. We're going to have a review of this incredible author's latest offering. She writes wonderful historical fiction. And this latest one, Follow Me to Africa, is about Mary Leakey, the first female paleoanthropologist. After that, we're going to be reviewing The Space Between the Stars by Angela Miller Rothbart. This is her second novel. Then we have a very exciting collection of short stories. Alistair McKay brings us The Lucky Ones, his new collection of short stories. We go from short stories to memoir. We have We Two from Heaven. This is a memoir by South African author James Weil, and it has the most glorious cover. I love it. After that, we have another nonfiction title. This one is in our nature slot, and it's Charging at Life. It's by Peter Mbombo Hitchens, and it's about his life in wildlife conservation. Then we've got two great interviews. These are also local and lekker. The first is with Juliet Mkreta, who's brought out a wonderful crime thriller. I've just finished reading it. It's called If the Dead Could Talk. And then another interview with a fantastic South African author who writes the most fascinating nonfiction. His name is Ted Buerter. He wrote the Daisy DeMelker book that came out, I think, last year. And this one is called Hollywood on the Felt. So this brings the glitz and the glamour of Hollywood to Johannesburg. He's got some very interesting information in this book about Hollywood's heyday in Johannesburg. And that will be our show for today. All of this will be bookmarked by some very fine music. We are, after all, Fine Music Radio. And that music is beautifully curated and collected by Mzuma Keta. We're going to start off with our first track today, which really celebrates the theme of the show. It's Proudly South African by Track 5.
Should never lose faith.
was proudly South African by Track 5, and you're tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. For our every 2 weeks, we have this show for an hour. We bring you reviews of the latest books to hit our shelves and also some wonderful interviews. And as per that track, Proudly South African, all the books on today's show are very proudly South African. Starting with Penny Hawes' Follow Me to Africa. Shirley Gula read this fantastic piece of historical fiction. This is not the first piece of historical fiction that Penny Hawes has written, and we have featured them all on this show because they're all fantastic. Her first was The Curious Miss Cust, which was about the first female veterinarian. The second one was about Bertha Benz, the wife of the man who invented the Mercedes-Benz. And now in Follow Me to Africa, we look at Mary Leakey, the first ever paleo female paleoanthropologist. So don't just follow me to Africa, follow me into this segment, and let us welcome Shirley Gula. Shirley, tell us all about Follow Me to Africa by Penny Hall.
Let me start with the author's note at the end of Follow Me to Africa, Penny Hall's latest novel based on a real person, Mary Leakey. Her response to the question as to why she writes historical fiction instead of inventing her own characters is that the first is more difficult because it comes with real responsibility. Let me say that while some readers prefer to go to the source, I find a well-researched fictional account based in reality to give one a real sense of the person. So, Hawes' tackling of the life of Mary Leakey, partly through the parallel, entirely fictional relationship with a 17-year-old English visitor to the Olduvai Gorge, does it for me, especially since a recent visit to the Okavango Delta in Chobe made me hunger anew for the sights and smells of the African savannah. And boy, does Africa, the people, the animals, and the scenery come alive. The Louis and Mary Leakey story is well documented, but in this account, the unschooled Mary comes to life as she finds her feet and earns a reputation as the meticulous patient scientist she is. She is brave enough to weather the condemnation of the world as she and the married Louis create their own future together amidst a scandal. While Mary got the worst of it, the worlds of archaeology and paleontology are so much the richer for it. It's no secret that the adventurous yet somewhat remote Mary won everyone over, and she becomes the mentor to the young girl, teaching her not only the ways of the bush but lessons for life. Hawes' account of the real relationship with the cheetah is used well, though out of the timeline, but to illustrate some good points. Hall moves from the judgmental 1930s of the UK to the freer time in the 1980s in Africa, from Mary and her parents to Grace and hers, both of the women having deeply troubled relationships with their parents, and to Mary's and Grace's intense connection over a matter of days. These are telescope days in which Grace inevitably grows and is able to make her own life-changing decisions. Just to sum it up, it really was a very compelling book. And I, much as I enjoyed it, I actually enjoyed even more hearing Penny Hawes at the Franschhoek Literary Festival this month.
You know, Shirley, I couldn't agree with you more. I also really enjoy historical fiction to give me some insight into our history. I much prefer it to nonfiction, interestingly enough, and even more interestingly enough, the world has seen a massive increase in the popularity of historical fiction. And I'm very curious about this. Just over the last few years, sales have rocketed of historical fiction. I'm very curious as to the psychology of that. I would love to know why it's gone that way. So what I can tell you about Penny Hall, this is a fantastic novel, as Shirley mentioned, Follow Me to Africa. Penny Hall snapped up a big international deal. And these three novels have all been published internationally to much success and much acclaim. And they're distributed here in South Africa, which is great too. So what that means, what the beauty of this is that you get to go and hear Penny Hall talking about her books, maybe at the exclusive books near you or at another book festival or a book event. So I do recommend that you follow all the publishers and exclusive books on social media so you can see when their events are. And Penny is a treat to see in real life talking about her book. Nothing gives you as much insight into a book you've enjoyed as hearing the author speak about it. So thank you for mentioning that, Shirley, and thank you for your wonderful review. Up next, we have another great South African book to tell you about. This one is called The Space Between the Stars, and Beryl Eichenberger, our wonderful reviewer, is here to tell us about it. I have read the first book by Angela Miller Rothbart. I think it came out 2 years ago. It's called The Lightness of Air. And so I am very interested to hear what Beryl has to say about The Space Between the Stars. Welcome to the show, Beryl.
There are many novels about the South African apartheid era, the politics, the tragedies, terror attacks, losses, the fear, the loves, the absurdity of the laws of separation, laws and lifestyles that 30 years later we're still paying for and living with. The classification by colour led also to families being split. If one person had a lighter skin, they could be reclassified and live a privileged white life, sometimes secretly visiting their families, often never having contact with them again. Cruel, heartbreaking. Love across the colour line was strictly forbidden. It was pursued and vilified, the punishments meted out by the police horrific. Freedom is hard won, as we so well know. So do we need another story? My personal opinion is yes. Space Between the Stars by Angela Miller Rothbart has a definite place on the shelves of memory. To take a phrase that underlines the Holocaust stories, lest we forget. In healing, the stories need to be told, and a born free generation need to understand the cost of freedom. By continuing to tell those stories, we hold that history, be able to look to a future that is free from discrimination. Rothbart's personal background was of growing up in Paarl, sheltered and privileged, and with relieving some of that time through what she knew of certain families on their farm. She acknowledges the heroines of those stories. Bertha, Margaret, Ella Lou, Susan Reeve and Gillian. This one's for you, she says. Poignantly, she closes with, in memory of Margie Fortein. And using her experiences, she has crafted a story around the people she knew, I think centred mostly on Margie. When the struggle was at its zenith in the turbulent years of the 70s and 80s, we meet Mimi and Karel Apollis, workers on the wine farm Tweefontein. They are a good, hard-working people with a special relationship with the owners of the farm. Passively accepting of the apartheid laws, not wanting to stir the dust or endure the brutality of the nationalist government, Mimi works at the main house and Karel Foreman on the farm. Married in the 1950s, theirs is an enduring partnership. But their daughter, Elizabeth, is feisty, curious, restless, as so many of the younger coloured community. She is determined to fight the oppressive apartheid laws to bring freedom to the country. When she meets the British-born activist Robert Booth at a protest march, they fall into a forbidden love across the colour line. They are marked by the secret police and have to flee South Africa. Emmy is the child they left behind, the child with blue eyes and blonde hair, protected by farm owners Frieda and Dirk. And it is this story of the one left behind, the child who looks different from the other kids on the farm, who lives in a farm worker's cottage, yet goes to a white school, the Witkind, an insult in a coloured community, with only a vague memory of her mother. Her grandparents are her all. The white friends of her mother are ever present in her life, forming strong bonds of respect and love. Emmy's life straddles two worlds. When Elizabeth finally returns in 1993, when Emmy is a teenager, there is turmoil, questions, memories, a tough story that many children of exiles can relate to, a reminder for the future. Rothbart presents a credible story. The Jewish characters, the friends that support the exile, the subterfuge that confounded the police. The all-too-tragic journey of Robert and Elizabeth. At times I found the language a little flowery. I would have preferred a crisper narrative, but it is an easy and authentic read and has a deserved place. The Space Between the Stars by Angela Miller Rothbart is self-published through Texture.
Thank you so much, Beryl Eichenberger, for joining us to chat about The Space Between the Stars by Angela Miller Rothbart. That book sounds like it's got a lot of heart, which is going to lead us into our next track, The Shape of My Heart by Wouter Kellerman. But before we go into that, I want to tell you something about Beryl Eichenberger. If you're a regular listener to this show, you will be very familiar with her voice. Beryl has been reviewing on Book Choice for a really long time. In fact, before I joined the show as host, she was already reviewing books, so she goes back years. Beryl is also involved in something called Women's Zone, which I want to tell you about. This is a women's library, and it's situated at Artscape, and they have an incredible collection of books, and this is open to anybody. They also have some great programs. They have authors who come in once a month on a Saturday for an author chat, and they do a knit and natter session. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, go onto Facebook and look up Women's Zone, or look up Beryl Eichenberger, and reach out to her. And her and Nancy Richards run this Woman's Own Library. I recently took a book out from it because I walked in and the shelves are lined with the most delicious current books, fiction and nonfiction. So you can join their library and you can take out some of these books and join them for some of their conversations. I highly recommend it. I had a great time at the Woman's Own Library. So thank you, Beryl, for all you do for books and for telling us about the Space Between the Stars and the Woman's Zone and all the events you do and. So let's go to that track. This is Shape of My Heart by Vota Kellerman.
Beethoven and Boogie is the title of a fun concert to be held at the Baxter Concert Hall on Tuesday, June the 10th, featuring me, Charles Duplessis, with my trio, Richard Koch, and the Cape Town Festival Orchestra.
The program includes arrangements of music by Charles, Bach, Beethoven, Vivaldi, and Mozart, as well as Oscar Peterson, Duke Ellington, and Astor Piazzolla.
Tickets range from 100 to 250 Rand and are available at Web Tickets. Book now.
Choose any of 450 guided adventures across five continents with Expat Explore, where you arrive as strangers but leave as friends. Expat Explore celebrates their 20th birthday with a special anniversary sale, offering their legendary value-for-money tours with expert guides and memory-packed itineraries. For your next adventure to qualify, simply go to expatexplore.com and enter this code, FMR10. Make more memories for less with Expat Explore, travel made possible. This offer is valid only for 2025. T's and C's apply. Visit expatexplore.com.
The Fine Music Radio Bursary Trust Music Awards are instrumental in a young performer's career. Hear it from previous winners.
Hi, I'm Frances van Vieren, a soprano and winner in the classical vocal section of the Fine Music Radio Bursary Competition. Having grown up overseas, it was so special to receive this award in my home country. It proved that I am going down the right path and that my hard work is paying off.
To win your share of 120,000 Rand, visit fmr.co.za and click Bursary. These awards are made possible thanks to the support of the Rolf Stefan Nussbaum Foundation.
That was Shape of My Heart by Vota Kellerman, and you're tuned in to Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. And our show, as always, is sponsored by our very special friends at Exclusive Books. If a book you seek does truly exist, you will absolutely most definitely find it at your local Exclusive Books, either in real life or online. So we are lucky to be back because we have a book coming up called The Lucky Ones by Alistair Mackay. But we're even luckier because we have a new reviewer that I want to introduce you to. Joining us today for the very first time is a young man named Riley Herbert Henry. Riley is a writer and a book reviewer. He has an Instagram feed under the title Reimagine Lit. The word reimagine, no space, and L-I-T. And that's where he reviews all sorts of books. And he's a very exciting book reviewer, and he's an exciting up-and-coming writer. And so he joined us for the very first time to tell us about a collection of short stories by wonderful South African writer Alistair McKay. Welcome to the show, Riley Herbert-Henry, for your debut, and to Alistair McKay's book, which is not a debut.
Once in a while, a book comes along that feels as if it perfectly captures the human condition. It lays itself bare for the reader and says, here, look at yourself, see what you were made of. Such is the case for The Lucky Ones, a collection of short stories by the exceptionally talented Alistair McKay. Identity and belonging are at the centre of this book. McKay takes us on a journey through South Africa, from the townships to the suburbs, the beautiful landscapes of the Tsitsikamma, to the hustle and bustle of city life in New York. The Lucky One spans time and space to create a sweeping set of global stories. It proves to us that no matter where we are, at our core, we are all made of the same things. The short story structure is a difficult thing to pull off. The writer has so few words to bring an entire experience into motion, to create enough backstory that the characters are memorable and believable, but also to maintain the brevity and pace required of such a short piece. Alistair McKay does this and so much more. His characters are real and raw. They have an emotional vulnerability that is sometimes difficult to read, but so compelling that you just can't turn your eyes away from the page. McKay tackles themes of identity and queerness. His characters are finding their feet, stumbling and failing along the way, driven by the best of intentions that don't always translate the way they are meant to. He dives into the politics of place, showing readers the situations that are so easy to look away from. McKay shows us the beauty of the world around us and the terror of it. The climate crisis is also a central theme in this collection, with many of the stories showing us what will happen if we continue to sit idly by and ignore the warning signs that are all around us. McKay weaves through anxiety and depression with vulnerability and care. He tells the stories of so many of us who struggle with mental health issues without criticizing or ridiculing. He simply states it as a fact of life, that we as a people need to be cognizant of and empathetic towards. You may think that the themes of this book would lead to quite a depressing read, but you would be wrong. Each story gives us hope. The characters experience hardships, but do not give up. They fight for what is right and seek the best in every situation. A woman who can't have children of her own but finds purpose in helping someone else's children. A gay man who struggles with his identity but is surrounded by people who love him. A mother who worries for her child but vows to love them no matter what. These are the characters who defy the world and its adversities, who seek their own happiness. These short stories are full of heart. They are erudite and evocative and are a must-read for anyone who wants to see to the heart of themselves and the people they love. The Lucky Ones by Alistair McKay is published by Quella Books, an imprint of NB Publishers.
Thank you so much, Riley. You did a great job. We're so happy to have you join us as a guest reviewer, and we hope to have you in a future show again and hear about what you're reading one more time. Do follow Riley on Instagram at reimaginelit to take a look at his reviews. Next up, we have a memoir. This one is We Two from Heaven. It's by James Weil. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I absolutely love this cover. I was in Joburg recently doing a book tour for my new novel, Book People, that you've heard about ad nauseum, so I won't bang on about that. But we were at Exclusive Books in Sandton City, and this book had just come out, and it was in the window of the store. And as I walked past, it just grabbed my eye, and I rubbernecked, and I turned to look at it, and I find it very eye-catching. So you can Google it, We Two from Heaven, to see what the cover looks like and see if you agree. Feel free to email me and let me know if you think I'm wrong, if you don't like the cover. I really love it. So enough about the cover of We Two from Heaven by James Weil. Melvin Minow is here to review the book and tell us what's between the two covers. Welcome to the show, Melvin Minow. Tell us all about We Two from Heaven with the glorious cover by James Weil.
By claim, memoirs should be memorable. A life worth living, worth writing about, should be worth reading. There is abundance of worth in James Wiley's poignant and stylish autobiographic, We Two from Heaven. This is prose that propels and documentation that intrigues. Its unusual lyrical elegance is beguiling. Honesty with a poetic touch is, to my mind, a faultless recipe for such endeavors. Otherwise, why would a life's tales matter? Add sensitive nostalgia as well as social historical facts, twists of humor in times of darkness, and you have this finely tuned, so readable book, as South African as a memoir can get. When the title is an enigmatic We Two from Heaven, the inspiration is to read on and on and on and discover the individual. Just who are those two and where is heaven? Throughout his finely detailed narrative, various duos come into play. There is a son and the father, son and mother, son and colleague, father and wartime friend, author and various partners, and there are two apes, one human. It's an autobiographical essay meticulously constructed in parts and chapters that weave past and present, distant and near history, and densely assemble a tapestry of a singular life, a man navigating living and landscapes, deep rural, country and city, urban, coastal, carrying a sensitive moral compass, ever questioning. While his tale is rooted in the uniquely South African experience and history, the curious colonial past, black and white life in the beautiful hinterland, living in the turbulent dark apartheid years before democracy, and the present's uncertainties, it's the story of a white English-speaking boy growing up, a family unique in its typicality of the time, facing the challenges of the local scenario of a transforming country. Even with a remarkable sense for the stripped-down dramatic and clarity of record, the book doesn't serve the author's ego, but is a journey of exploring the past. It follows the boy, developed an early moral, social and political awareness, growing up in the bucolic Eastern Cape, passing through university, dealing with a notorious apartheid army, and his escape from that, negotiating existence as adult life progresses, becoming an actor, director, writer. All this is charted against the family history. Central to the telling is, as he puts it, inscribing the legacy of the writings his father left behind, including a remarkable trove of letters while serving as a youth in the First World War. The book's title is from a line in a letter his father, also called James, sent to his uncle, dated 18 January 1916. It came from the front in France, where the writer and his friend Fatty Pringle were inside the heat of that terrible, bloody and relentless war. He writes, and I quote, "There are three of us in this billet, a Scotlander and we two from heaven. I call South African heaven because that is what it is to us after this." The casting of South Africa as heaven is gorgeously ironic when Wiley Jr. details his own experience in the apartheid army, placing the book constantly in counterpoint to his father's letters. The truthfulness in which Wiley writes and his refined prose brings vivid color and dramatics to incidents he describes, whether at the boys' school, some of the funniest, the army or scenes with his mother, including her sad death. His honesty is in your face. The genuineness shines through in human passion. His feeling and thinking are all in the beautiful prose. This is a very fine book. We Two From Heaven is published by Jonathan Ball.
That was Melvin Minar telling us about a memoir called We Two From Heaven, which is by James Wild. Next up, John Hanks is here, and he's in our regular green book or nature book or conservation book slot. And today he's telling us about a book called Charging at Life by Peter Mbobo Hitchens. It's about a life in wildlife conservation.
Here is a book which must be read by all those who aspire to become field biologists and by all other listeners who I'm sure will be fascinated by the story of one of the unsung heroes of nature conservation in southern Africa. The title of the book is Charging at Life, Peter Mbobo Hitchens, A Life in Wildlife Conservation. It's been compiled by Peter's second wife, Stella, with major contributions by Peter's close colleagues over many years, Clive Walker and Orty Borkring. Peter was born in 1914 in Germiston and died in 2019, leaving behind pages of the meticulous records he kept during the 79 years of his life. He became one of the world's leading authorities on black rhino, and his extensive records covered aspects of the life and behavior of the species, such as diet, reproduction, aging, and territoriality. And he was the first person to use radio telemetry to study black rhino movements and behavior. It's a story which had to be told, although Peter stubbornly refused all offers to help from his colleagues to write his own story, but fortunately, his field notes remained intact. My review can only touch briefly on Peter's very full life. Starting with his time at school, he excelled at sport, and by the time he reached Standard 8, he was in the top teams for cricket, rugby and swimming for his age group. Sporting activities did not appeal to him, and he left sport behind for the rest of his time at school, focusing on his love of the outdoors and everything that moved, an interest that set him up for the rest of his life. In 1959, he got a job with the aquarium in Durban, maintaining the smaller aquariums and keeping keeping detailed notes on the sharks removed from the shark nets. He did not like the fact that the sharks were being killed in the nets for the benefit of the bathers in the area, telling a newspaper reporter that he believed strongly that the nets should be removed as far more serious threats to local residents came from deaths from traffic accidents, whereas a shark might only kill just one person, not necessarily killing them. He kept up these strong views of the inherent importance of nature for the rest of his life, often speaking out and criticizing disruptive human behavior, but always continuing with his field notes and record keeping. He joined the Natal Parks Board in 1961 as an assistant ecologist to Mr. Sluwe Gamezo, where he was given the nickname by the Zulu game guards Mbobo, meaning hole, as he often had his mouth open, and this name stayed with him for the rest of his life and is in the title of the book. Two highlights of this remarkable man's life deserve special mention. In 1970, he was a founder member of the Game Rangers Association of Africa, a multinational, non-racial, non-political organization, which today has over 1,800 members. I've no doubt that it was due to Peter's determination and boundless energy. He was chairman for 8 years that the association succeeded in recognizing the sport and supporting the work of Africa's Game Rangers. Then, in 1985, he established the Rhino and Elephant Foundation together with Anthony Martin and Clive Walker, and Pete became the driving force behind his Rhino's work. Where this book will interest lots of people, as it certainly did for me, is a selection of previously unpublished photographs of Peter and his family and friends. The title again, Charging at Life, Peter Mbobo Hitchens, A Life in Wildlife Conservation. It's got chapters written by Autie Borquin, Clive Walker and Stella Hitchens. It was published in 2024 by Flyleaf Publishing and Distribution South Africa, who should be contacted and asked how best to get a copy if you cannot get one through Exclusive Books. I will also be able to help you if you're still having problems, and at 395 Rand per copy, it's worth every cent.
That was John Hanks. He was telling us all about a book called Charging at Life, about a life in wildlife conservation by Peter Mbobo Hitchens. How about some music? This is Crazy by the Buscade String Ensemble. Crazy by the Buscade String Ensemble. And if you've only just joined us, you're not crazy. You're tuned in to Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your bookie host, Paige Nick. And our show is sponsored, as always, by our wonderful friends at Exclusive Books. We've come to the last little segment of our show where we bring the interviews. We've got two interviews today, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, every single book we're covering on today's show is proudly South African. How cool is that? This is a 100% South African show. Not only are the books all South African, not only are the interviewers all South African, but the music in today's show is all South African too. Every single one of these tracks is South African made. So local and so liquor. So for our first of two interviews, Twangi Kalula, the legend, is here, and he's going to be chatting to a debut author who's just brought out a very, very exciting crime thriller. I'm willing to bet money on the fact that it's going to be the beginning of a series, but let's see what the author says. Twangi Kalula and Juliet Nketa, who wrote If the Dead Could Talk, welcome to Book Choice on Fine Music Radio.
A good crime thriller is fast-paced, has intriguing characters, is held together by a layered plot, and throws in a few unexpected twists. If the Dead Could Talk, the debut novel by Juliet Nketa, has all those elements, including the mandatory dead body, broken political ties, a little bit of romance, and a very scenic backdrop. Welcome to Fine Music Radio, Juliet.
Hi, Twangi. Thank you so much for having me.
It is so good to have you here. Before we get started, someone told me that Fine Music Radio has a special place in your heart. So could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I'll try very hard not to waffle, but it does. In my teenage years or in high school, my mother, all she ever listened to was Fine Music Radio. She loved the classical side and listening to how these people spoke English. She really enjoyed that. And so what would happen was I went to Westerford High School in Cape Town, Newlands. I would take a taxi from there to Claremont, where she had a little stand, and also in Wynberg, she had a little secondhand clothing stand, and she would have a little radio there. And then I would sit and I'd wait and I'd wait. And then when I heard a certain jingle, not sure what it was, we knew it was 4 o'clock. Then we'd pack up our things and then I'd help my mom get back to her home. So, yeah.
So it's a good full circle moment to finally have you in studio.
It is. She would have been so proud, actually.
And she should be proud. I mean, your book is fantastic. And I'm just so interested. Lots of people want to write a novel. Lots of people love the crime genre. How did your book come about and why crime?
Crime. I love solving puzzles. I love the justice that comes along in the crime books because the killer is always caught. Mm. And so I started writing If the Dead Could Talk in 2018. Took a while, a lot of manuscript drafts, but the Jakes Havel Foundation found me, picked me up, if you want to call it that. And I got help in honing or fixing the manuscript, and Quella published it.
And I'm so glad they did. And you know, can you give us a brief overview of the plot? I hate giving plot overviews, particularly with crime, because I always end up ruining it. So I'm going to hand it over to you. So what is the book about?
Well, it's a whodunit, which is different from a thriller. It's always, it's in the name, who did it at the end. You have your suspects, your red herrings in the book, until we find out who committed the murder at the end. But basically, it's a young woman, master's a psychology student called Azania Sitosa, 26 years old, raised by her mother. And then her father, who she never knew, but he supported her financially, passes away. And at first, it's thought to be a suicide, but she smells a rat. And the rat stinks. So she travels to Neisner to find out more about her father, his political life, and why he might have been killed. And she tries to piece the evidence together. And she comes to a conclusion at the end.
And there are very few full-time novelists in South Africa. So by day, you work in legal transcription. How did that play a role in your crime writing? Because I found your understanding of the criminal process and the characters was just so on the marks. I assume it played a bit of a role in your writing.
Yes, it did. You know, I usually say with transcribing, it played with dialogue because I listen to how people speak and how they sound. So then it's easier to write the dialogue. It's more authentic. But as regards to the legal side, I'm actually doing labor law, not
so,
criminal.
So it's slightly different.
It's slightly different. Yeah. I've only ever done 2 criminal cases in my life, but it's usually labor law. I had to do a lot of research, and the South African police services were very helpful in Neisner to help me find out how the processes work.
You mentioned you grew up in Cape Town, and I think it really comes through in the text, because one thing that struck me is that you have a diverse set of characters, you know, very different backgrounds, but they all sounded very authentic. Was it quite difficult to get into each of their voices? You know, I mean, you different ages, different races, and everyone sounds like someone I've met before.
Yes, that was difficult. Azania was the easiest, of course, because I think she's the most like me. Florian was a bit more difficult. I had to write out a bio. And also things I remembered while I was still at Westerford in Newlands area, Claremont, southern suburbs. I tried to tap into my memory for that. And then just the different characters are based a little bit on people I do know, but I hope they don't discover that as they read or they don't see themselves there. But that was the best way to make the characters the most authentic. But Azani was definitely the easiest to write.
And the other big characters in your book are the areas it's written in. So it's not often that we go to Naizen in a novel or Gqeberha. There are even some scenes that are set in Cape Town. Can you tell me a little bit about why you decided to kind of set it there and what role it kind of played in the narrative, the area?
Well, there's actually a simpler explanation than what people usually think. They think it's something deeper, but as writers, we are always advised, write what you know. So I wrote about areas I'm very au fait and familiar with that I knew like the back of my hand. We've got a house in Naizen, a little RDP house in Naizen, and we were there for about 7 years.
Yeah.
So I know the township surroundings of Naizen very well, and also the suburban area. So it was easier to write and set it there. And a part of me as well wanted to set it in a place people were not familiar with, because a lot of crime stories are set in Cape Town. So I thought I had a bit of an advantage to set it in Naizen, since I knew Naizen well, and I think it would make people interested in taking the book.
And it's a sad thing. I mean, crime is such a huge part of our lives as South Africans, and you cannot escape that. And one of the things I liked about your book is that there's subtle social commentary through it. I mean, you kind of draw attention to the shortfalls in the system and those kinds of things. How important was it for you to include that element?
It was very important. You know, I really take my hat off to the police. They're doing a very difficult, difficult job. They also have their own families, and I try to bring the human side of, you know, being a police officer. But at the same time, I think South Africans enjoy crime because we've all experienced crime and we would like justice. We're all happy at the end to find the justice or get closure. And that's why I think I was drawn to crime and bringing that out, so that we all would like a bit of closure.
And sadly, unfortunately, we don't get it a lot, but in your book, at least, we do.
There is, yeah.
But you did leave some open ends, and you wrote some characters that are very likable and relatable. So will we see these characters again? Are you working on anything at the moment?
I am working on something I've just started, but it isn't anything to do with Florian and Azania at the moment.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if it's called writer's block. I'm not sure. But I wanted to go in a different route, but still crime, because I love crime. I love whodunits. I love mystery. But I think in future you might see Florian and Azania again. We'll keep you updated.
We'll give you some time. I think it's just so refreshing to have a new voice in the crime scene, the local crime scene. So if you do enjoy a good whodunit, I think this one is top tier and it should definitely be on your reading list. If the Dead Could Talk by Juliet Mqeta was published by Aquila and retails for 340 rand.
You know, Twanji is right. Well, Twanji is always right. But in this case, Twanji is particularly right. It is so refreshing to have these incredible new voices. And Juliet Mqeta is, I met her this last weekend at the Franschhoek Literary Festival. She's so fun, so exciting. And I think she's got a great voice. And I think we are still going to see an awful lot for her. But there are two things that I want to mention about this last interview that we just had before we move on to our next fabulous interview. The first is the mystery of the jingle. So this story actually got bigger and bigger. Juliet came on the show and she told us the story about how when she was finished at school, her mom always used to listen to Fine Music Radio, and there was a jingle that was always on at 4 o'clock, and that signified to Juliet that time that she could go home finally with her mom, help her mom pack up her stall and go home after a long day. After this interview, Twanji and the Fine Music Radio team, Vanessa Levenstein, they went on a mystery hunt to find the jingle, to find out what jingle that is. They went into the Fine Music Radio archives and they found that jingle. So you can find that post on the Fine Music Radio Facebook page. Just scroll down and you'll find where they mention the jingle. I'll try and share that too. It's such a fun, cute story. And I love that they solved the mystery that came from a crime writer who wrote a mystery. So it's all full circle. The other thing I wanted to mention that came out of that interview was how Juliet mentioned how she was supported in writing this debut novel by the Jakes Hervel Foundation. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about Jakes Hervel. He was born on a farm in Malvern, 64 kilometers from Somerset East, in 1946. He had 6 brothers and 3 sisters and ultimately went on to study at the University of the Western Cape, where he obtained his BA in Afrikaans and Dutch and sociology cum laude in 1967. But that's not all. In his lifetime, Jakes Hervel received 13 honorary doctoral degrees from universities in South Africa and around the world. Talk about a serious overachiever. And so today, the foundation was founded, well, it wasn't founded today, but it was founded some years ago to further the legacy of this great man, this holistic individual who distinguished himself as an educator, a liberator, a patron of the arts, business. He was a thought leader and a business leader, and he was a family man. So the ideal of this society, it's based on democratic values, and they aim to contribute towards the creation of a free and fair society in which all its members are active and engaged participants working together towards the shared ideal of equality of all humankind. The wonderful thing is that the Jakes Gerwel Foundation does have offer a lot of projects and residencies for writers and other artists. So if you're interested, go on to the Jakes Gerwel Foundation online and you can find out about what they have coming up. And as you can see, things like this fantastic book, If the Dead Could Talk by Julius Mkhwetha, has come out of the Jakes Gerwel Foundation. In fact, so much work in South Africa has come out of this. We're going to go into a track now. Then we're going to have our final interview, which I'm very excited about because it's one of my favorite South African authors. And this track is Everything's Coming Up Roses, and it's by Julie Harris.
You'll be swell, you'll be great, gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here, starting now, honey, everything's coming up roses. Clear the decks, clear the tracks, you've got nothing to do but relax. Blow a kiss, take a bow, honey, everything's coming up roses. Now's your inning, stand the world on its ear, set it spinning.
Welcome back. That was Everything's Coming Up Roses by Julie Harris, and you're tuned into right into the back end of our Book Choice show today. My name is Paige Nick. I'm the host of this show, and our show is sponsored by Exclusive Books. And finally, we've got coming up, last but not least, we have a fantastic interview. Vanessa Levenstein managed to get a very busy and prolific Ted Buerta into the studio to chat about his latest book, Hollywood on the Felt. Welcome to the show, Vanessa Levenstein, and my best, Ted Buerta.
In 1913, a reclusive American millionaire lived on the top floor of the famous Carlton Hotel in Johannesburg. Now, his story is particularly pertinent to all of us at Fine Music Radio because this man, Isidor Schlesinger, was the father of film and radio in South Africa. Joining us today on Book Choice is Ted Buerta, author of Hollywood on the Felt. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, clearly this was a book that had to be written because I.W. Schlesinger, as he was called, is a legend, but a much-kept secret legend. Tell us about him.
Well, I mean, that's a lot to tell. It's a big story, a big man. I mean, I think anybody going into this book must see it as an adventure story because it really is an adventure of a man coming from America to South Africa in the gold mining days, making a lot of money, not in gold, but in real estate and insurance, and then somehow landing up with this bunch of theaters in Johannesburg and deciding to turn it into an entertainment empire and to create his own film production company that would match Hollywood, which is bizarre. I mean, you know, even people who are hearing this must think to themselves, like, Hollywood in 1913 was like nothing. It was like a piece of farmland in Los Angeles. It wasn't a name known to anybody around the world. And here was this guy in Johannesburg thinking, I'm going to do exactly the same thing and create a Hollywood in Johannesburg. And, you know, that's always fascinated me from the first time I heard the story as a child, you know, because I've always loved movies. And I never associated South Africa with movies. And here we were, one of the pioneering countries in the world in like big, big movie making.
The book has been 2 decades in the making or writing. Many challenges. What was the biggest challenge?
Well, he is the biggest challenge because, you know, sometimes people ask, or often people say, how long did it take you to write the book? Well, I mean, when you say 20 years, it didn't take me 20 years to write it, but it took me 20 years to research it and find information about this man who, despite being like Mr. Movie, Which was always, one thinks of publicity and, you know, movie people want to be in the limelight and everything. And he didn't. He wanted to be out of the public light. He didn't like being written about. So finding information about him was really, really, really difficult. And that's why, even though he was one of the most kind of illustrious person deserving of fame in South Africa, no one really knows about him.
He was an enigma.
He was real enigma. And, you know, even though apparently he liked to go around and he drove in these very beautiful cars, and he liked to know that people would say, ah, there goes I.W. Schlesinger. And that was about it. People didn't know anything about what the story was behind the man. And, you know, he traveled all around the world and he had businesses all around the world. But, you know, movie making was this thing that he fell in love with, you know. And the book is about this adventure of him trying to put together this movie company and then making these incredible movies. It was big in those days, huge spectacles that have all been, most of them have been lost now. And he made King Solomon's Mines. He made The Blue Lagoon. People don't realize that these movies that have since become famous were first made in Johannesburg, Durban, the Lowveld, Maputo, then Lorenzo Marx, all over the country. And that's where they started, in Joburg.
Hence Hollywood on the Veld.
Right.
The title.
Right.
Each chapter ends on a cliffhanger, which clearly lends itself, your book, to a series or movie. Who would you cast as I.W. Schlesinger?
Gosh, you know, my last book was Daisy DeMelka, and I always knew exactly who I would cast as Daisy DeMelka. But Schlesinger, I've never really thought about it. It's probably because I've always thought of him as this enigma. To even have a movie about him would be, I think it would be a great role to play, plus a lot of the other characters in the movie, you know, like his main cameramen, his actors that he brought around from all over the world. You haven't mentioned it yet, but there's a lot of intrigue in the story.
And like your previous work, Daisy DeMelka, you never pretend to have all the insights or answers. What struck me about Hollywood on the Veld, that there are two themes that are as prevalent today as they were then. Racism, that's universal. And then as South Africans, we have this very Euro-American-centric belief that we are inferior. Why do you think that is the case?
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I think Schlesinger was also struck by this. Remember, he was an American who came out here, and he loved South Africa. I mean, he was passionate about South Africa. He made sure that he was buried here. He lived his whole life here. But he always felt that South Africans didn't, like, give their all to the potential that South Africa had, which I find his kind of message very, very kind of real still today. And, you know, back then people said South Africans thought his movies weren't good enough because they came from South Africa. You know, they wanted American movies, they wanted British movies, they wanted German, French movies. Even though when they took his movies overseas and showed them in London or Italy, wherever, people said they were fantastic. So, I mean, there is that, which we still have today, you know, nothing that comes out of South Africa can be as great as what, you know, American, or when it's really, we have so much creativity here and so much good stuff, like the ideas that come out of South Africa are incredible, you know. And so, I mean, that's one thing that I get out of the book. And the racism side for me, which is very interesting, is Schlesinger sometimes, by the people who know about him, gets kind of hauled over the coals for, you know, being a racist, which I never found any proof of. To the contrary, he was fascinated by the Zulu Nation. I mean, here comes a man in 1913, and the first things he wants to make a movie about are Shaka, Dingaan, and Sechuayo. Which is, you know, it's just like he wants to have these huge battle scenes. He wants to, and he took these people out of, there's no record of where he got his actors from, but I mean, he had all of these black actors back in 1913, 14, 15, 16. I mean, for me, another fascinating story would be to find out, where do these people come from and where did they go to? And, you know, what did they think about it? But again, you know, it's like a lot of nonfiction. It's hard to track these stories if there's no sources for it.
I want to go back to what you were saying about the great creativity that comes out of South Africa. Hollywood on the Veld by Ted Boerter is an example of our fine creativity, our fine writing, and we are equal, if not better, to any other place in the world. Thank you, Ted Boerter.
Thank you very much.
Hear, hear, Vanessa. I could not agree with you more. In fact, I've just been saying to a whole lot of people at the talks that I've been doing that next time you go into an exclusive books or into the book lounge or Love Books in Joburg, go up to an exclusive books bookseller. Tell them who your favorite international author is, your absolute favorite auto-buy, that person who you'll buy no matter what the book's about, and ask them who a South African author equivalent is of that author and see who they present to you. There's a very good chance that you might just find your very next favorite author. We really have so much incredible talent here. But back to Ted Buerta, I want to tell you a little bit about him because he's just an astonishing author and a wonderful human being. He's great to follow on social media because his writing is quite varied. If you like coffee, if you like interesting places to go, then follow him. Ted Buerta has been a journalist and an author. He's worked full-time for news agencies like Reuters, but mostly he's been a freelancer for newspapers and magazines across the world, including the New York Times. He's written for Esquire magazine. He's written for Condé Nast Traveler, Outside. He's written for The Times and The Independent. He also obviously has written all these books, from travel books to memoir to narrative nonfiction. And these are all very exciting books. We covered his last book about Daisy DeMelka, called Daisy DeMelka, last year when it came out, and now here's Hollywood on the Felt. So again, cannot recommend him highly enough. Start out by following him on social media and finish off by buying one of his books. You will not be disappointed. With that, there's nothing left to say other than I hope you were not disappointed with today's show. We've had a really astonishingly good lineup of super local and super liquor stuff, which I've absolutely loved. I want to thank all of our reviewers who work so tirelessly, Shirley Guler, Beryl Eichenberger, our newest reviewer, Riley Herbert Henry. We also had Melvin Minar this week, John Hanks, Twanji Kalula, and Vanessa Levenstein. What a great job you guys do. And it really is hard work. I tell you what, they bring such passion and drive. Mzuma Keta, who brings passion and drive to building the show for us and collecting our music and curating our music and building the show, putting it all together in one neat, tidy package, all these lots of different parts. Fine Music Radio for giving us this hour-long show. This is really one of the only hour-long shows on radio that I know of that reviews books for a whole hour. And the only reason we can do that is because we have Exclusive Books as our sponsors. So thank you to Exclusive Books. We're going to play out now with My Way by Dimitrios Giannakis. And until next time, happy reading.